From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on November 17, 2000, when a mother witnessed the death of her 16-year-old son. Christopher Jones was hanging out with a friend when he was shot outside of his home. His mother, Serena Cotton, told Open Mic Rochester that following Chris's death, she couldn't eat, shower, or comb her hair. She missed Chris too much to do anything. Since his death, Cotton has been an outspoken activist, organizing efforts to curb gun violence in Rochester. It's an issue that Willie Lightfoot has made a priority as a member of City Council. And yesterday he announced the Think About It campaign, an effort to raise awareness about the causes and effects of gun violence in our community. We're going to discuss the campaign this hour and what local anti-gun violence activists think it will take to make our community safer. And we'll go ahead and welcome our guests now. We're going to be talking to Serena Cotton later this hour, founder of Rock the Peace, who lost her son to gun violence. Councilman Lightfoot's here. Willie's back right here, and chair of the Public Safety Youth and Recreation Committee as well for Rochester. Nice to have you back here, Willie.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Sabrina Lamar, assistant director for Rise Up Rochester, who lost her brother to gun violence. Sabrina, I'm so sorry. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for having me.
And Teron Sattler-LeBlanc is here, and Teron is local chapter leader for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense. Nice to have you back here with us as well.
Good to be back.
I guess I'll start with the councilman just because, you know, you've said, I think I've heard you say, that you can't legislate gun violence away. But
yeah.
But can you put a public awareness campaign? You know, I think about all the anti-smoking stuff
yes.
that studies show didn't work all that well over the years.
Right.
Why is this one going to be different?
I think this is different, first and foremost, because it's a grassroots effort. This isn't coming from corporate America down to the public. This is actually coming from the public to everyone. And the unique ways that we'll be utilizing and putting out this campaign through the barbershops, the salons, restaurants, utilizing local businesses, as well as people and partners that work in this every day.
Okay, and we're going to talk about what it means here. And I guess I'll start before we kind of dive into more of the specifics with the councilman, from the rest of our guests here for their reaction to this. And Sabrina, you lost your brother when? How long ago now?
My brother died September 3rd, 1987. I was 10 years old. He was 18 years old. He was shot in a drive-by shooting on Stout Street in the city.
Seems like it's still pretty fresh for you. Even
absolutely.
After all these years. Yeah.
It's the reason I do the work that I do.
And you think about a campaign like this, I think everybody agrees that you've got to try just about everything you can with gun violence.
Absolutely.
Does this one give you optimism that it could be different, that it could actually sink in with young people who might pick up a gun?
Well, absolutely. I think... number one, there are a lot of organizations that are working in different silos. And so two things comes from that. Number one, we don't actually know what each other is doing. And number two, we may not be focusing on all of the areas that need to be focused on. Rise Up Rochester specifically specializes in aftercare. So it would be supporting families after there has been tragedy. And because our team is so small, we don't have enough people to focus on the preventive measure of it. So I think it's very important to be in this coalition, to be a part of this coalition, so we can attack this at every different avenue.
I mean, every moment that someone picks up a gun, it's a different person in a slightly different circumstance. You don't want to group everything together, but I'm just looking, Sabrina, at this campaign with the slogan, "A shot from a gun can't be undone." And I'm trying to think about who might have pulled the trigger of the gun that killed your brother. Is this the kind of thing that makes someone stop and think more? Maybe.
I know when I first read it, it was heart-wrenching for me. It was breathtaking for me. I'm hoping that it has that same effect on someone else who sees this.
Absolutely. You want it to work. You want anything to work. And Teron Sattler-LeBlanc, everybody wants this to work. Can it work?
Well, I think we have to be comprehensive in our approach. And so whether it's working through legislation, through our families and communities, I'm excited about the opportunity for us to bring together different parties of the community who are committed to working on this. My own family was impacted by gun violence in 1990. And in the note that the murderer left, he said, "I'm not sure that this is the best idea." So I think,
he was already thinking about it.
That was in his notes. This may not be the best idea. And, that's one of the only things we have left after that double murder suicide. But again, how do we you know, whether it's trying to prevent access to some of these really lethal firearms to people who shouldn't have it, finding other opportunities to engage the community, to empower them, to keep each other safe, to help diffuse situations. The work that's happening in Rochester is really amazing. There's a lot of different communities who are doing work, you know, sometimes at like 10 o'clock at night, 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's, you know, everyone has different ways that they approach this very challenging problem. I volunteer with Moms Demand Action, and we are an organization that got mobilized after the school shooting at Sandy Hook. But we quickly realized that this problem impacts our communities every day. Even here in Rochester, it wasn't even 2 weeks later after Sandy Hook that the West Webster Fire Department suffered their own losses as, you know, several of their members were ambushed.
Serena Cotton, what about you? I mean, I know you've got to think about Chris all the time, even though it's been coming up, what, 18 years now?
November would be 11 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got the wrong date there. Okay. So 11 years for you.
Yes.
Do you think this something like this can make an impact?
Of course. I work closely with Rise at Rochester, and we've been trying to get unity with the other organizations that are out there. And so as soon as we got the call from Willie Lightfoot, we was right there, because this is something that we've been wanting to do.
I guess, Willie, if there's one, I don't know if concern's not the right word for that I have, but, you know, you hear Sabrina talk about this takes her breath away when you first think about this. When you see this image, a shot from a gun can't be undone, think about it. We are on the same page. Everyone in this room is on that page already. You talk to young people who are at a crossroads in life, who are dealing with trauma, poverty, sometimes they've a feeling of hopelessness. I want to think this will impact them, but I haven't been in those shoes. I cannot relate to the hopelessness that some people feel. That does not excuse anyone picking up a gun and using it and taking a life. And I don't want to minimize that for a second, especially with people in this room who've lost family members to gun violence. But I can't personally relate to the hopelessness. What have you learned in talking to people who've been in those shoes about what it starts to move with them?
Right. That's a good, very good question. When this kind of came to me, basically, as a chair of public safety, I'm thinking, I'm on the call list when there's a homicide in the city. So when someone passes away or life is taken, no matter what time of day it is or what time of night or early in the morning, I get that call. As I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, you know, dreading that my phone rings at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, you know, by retiring from the fire department, being on there for 20 years, I've responded to many of these shootings in this city. And it just, you know, it got to a point where I said, you know, I want to do something. I feel like I'm compelled to do something, especially in the position that I am as chair of public safety. I feel like I have a responsibility to do something. So when I brought this to the mayor, first and foremost, I got to thank Mayor Lovely Warren and her administration for just giving me the latitude to be able to do this, and communications department for working with me on putting this together. I took the information. We had several images that we presented, that was presented to me and that they created. I took them to the barbershop for 2 weeks, and I put them out all over the walls of the shop, and I had people take markers and mark the ones that were most effective to them. Now I'm on Jefferson Avenue, so you got to understand, based on your question, these are the young kids. These are the men that are toting guns and that are doing this type of stuff. And this image that you're seeing and that we're putting out to the community was the number one image that they said appealed to them or made them think about it, right? And so I said, okay, this is it. And we had several images that we were presenting to the community. So I think the most important thing that we have to do, it's not about just the messaging, but the messaging starts the conversation. And I think that's what we've been kind of lacking. I haven't seen this conversation happening in our community consistently, only if it's like a police shoots somebody or you know, that type of crime. But when it's black on black crime or black on brown crime, we don't seem to be as outraged in our community as we are with other acts of gun violence in our community. So I wanted, number one, to start the conversation, continue the conversation, and bring a unified voice to the conversation. And I think everywhere I went, I talked with a lot of our partners, the Rochester Police Department, Pathways of Peace, Rock the Peace, Rise Up Rochester, Project Exile, Crime Stoppers, Center for Dispute Settlement. Every single one of our current partners that I talked to embraced this 100% and said, wow, finally, the city stepping up and wanting to lead this conversation and wanting to bring whatever resources that we may have available to help people and the ones that are currently existently doing this. Pathways of Peace is celebrating their 20 years of being out on the street. Last Saturday, a young man was killed or was buried that was doing the same work that Pathways of Peace do in Rochester. He was doing it in Albany, and he was shot in a drive-by shooting, breaking up a fight, doing his job. So this is dangerous work. It's work that people get burned out on quickly because a lot of people don't want to volunteer for this work. So we want to do everything that we can, first, to start the conversation, two, to let the people that are doing this work know that we see you. We don't want to tolerate this in our community either. And we want to, this city's behind you, and we want to help you in any way that we can to reach the goals that all of us want to see of educating, advocating, and eradicating gun violence in our community.
Listeners, if you've got thoughts to share on how to convince someone from not pick up that gun, to not commit an act of violence like that, and your thoughts on this campaign, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Sabrina Lamar is Assistant Director for Rise Up Rochester. How do you teach kids to stop, think, and react in a different way rather than with a gun? That's part of the work that I know you engage in.
Well, before I answer that, I just want to piggyback off what Willie was saying.
Sure.
We really want to encourage this community to get involved before they are affected by this. We don't want you to wait until it's your loved one that you've lost before you get involved. I think that's very important. And number two, to answer your question, oftentimes when these situations happen, a lot of children are forgotten about. The community and the resources focus so much on the parents that children often are left by the wayside, and they are not getting the resources that that they need. And so this plays a part when they're in school and when they're interacting with other kids in the community, whether they're fighting or whether, but just regular PTSD that some of these kids suffer from. So I think at this point it's very important to make sure we are providing resources for our children in this community so they, know how to deal with death, know how to deal with conflict, and know where to go and the resources to reach out to.
Okay. And in that moment, if there's a gun there, and I'm sure we'll talk to Chiron about sort of policy on this, because there's going to be some listeners who think you can make this campaign about anything you want, but if there's economic inequality and people feel hopeless, and if there's access to firearms, there's a lot of guns in a population, you're going to have violence like this no matter what. Now, that may be a cynical view or that may be a realistic view, but for those who say, look, that's where we've got to go here. We've got to reduce economic inequality. We've got to create hope for people. We've got to get guns away from people. Right now, the reality is there's still a lot of guns in our community. And if someone is in a conflict, if they're in a fight, if they're angry, if they're heated, they may have the opportunity to cause deadly harm instead of a punch. How do you get somebody to go in a different direction?
Well,
that's
why this campaign is called Think About It. We're not saying that we're going to be attacking wherever the illegal guns are being distributed at. This coalition, I'm not sure if that's their focus. I know that my focus would be encouraging people, not just kids, but people to think about it. You have a choice to make before things get out of hand.
Can I touch on that a little bit too? This is a two-part thing that we launched yesterday. There is the Think About It campaign, which is the visual piece that sparks the conversation that we're having today. Just think about the impact that this had already within 24 hours. Your office called me to have this conversation. So that shows you that it has an impact, number one, because I'm getting calls from all kind of people now wanting to have this conversation. So that's exactly what we wanted to do, was spark the conversation. The other part of it is the Rock Against Gun Violence Coalition. Now, the coalition purpose is to educate, advocate, and eradicate gun violence in the city of Rochester. The part of the advocates piece is the law piece. supporting new laws, the enforcement of current laws, as well as working to come up with new laws that would help us eradicate gun violence within our community. So that's the advocacy piece of the coalition. The educate piece is to do things like you're saying. I think we got a generation that we can save if we start reaching out to them now. What resources does the city have that could help that without any funding? We have rec centers. We have kids that come to these rec centers every day. They're there. They're getting meals. We have their attention. Let's start giving them educational tools that they can use to help mediate their own problems and things that they're having within their community. Let's try to figure out what type of trauma. Let's assess some of these things, utilizing some ideas and that the coalition is doing. And then, of course, the eradication piece is us just saying we're not tolerating this, and we're going to work from it from a multifaceted approach and use tools. If somebody, one of your listeners, and I've said this on other radio shows, has the answer to this, instead of people like looking at it and trying to poke holes in it, help us. Like, you know what I mean? Like, right. This violence affects everybody. Help us eradicate this. If you have the silver bullet, don't hold it to yourself. Give it to this community.
And to Sabrina's point, don't wait till your family or you are involved by gun violence to get involved. So if they want to get involved, Willie, what's the plan? What do they do?
This is what you do. You go to www.cityofrochester.gov/thinkaboutit. Or you can call directly my office, 585-428-6554.
428-6554 for the councilman's office there. And online, we'll link that to you if you like there. You know, Serena, what about you? What do you think about the moments that young people have when they're facing conflict or they're angry, something in their life has gone wrong, and they have access to a firearm? I mean, if it's within reach, the fear is in those moments they use it. And that's why when Willie and Chiron talk about the work that's done at 10 o'clock at night or 2 in the morning, someone has chosen to respond to a conflict with a gun instead of with words or even less deadly force. How much have you thought about how we get those moments to change when a young person has a gun around?
I can take you to my situation. My son being 16 and his killer being 16. The killer didn't think about it, and he had a gun, and he had alcohol and drugs in his system. So a few months ago, on the 10-year anniversary of Chris' death, I went to visit the killer. And when this came about, think about it, it struck me because that's what he told me. Had he thought about it, he wouldn't be in prison and Chris wouldn't be dead.
It's been 10 years. Where is he now? Where's the person who killed your son now?
He's still in prison. He's since been moved from where I visit him at, and I did visit him on the 10-year anniversary of the death, so now it's going on 11 years. He took the time to apologize because one moment, had he thought about it, the situation would be totally different.
I don't assume that was your first conversation with him. How often have you talked to him over the years?
Oh, that was the first.
That was the first.
Yeah. He asked me to come visit and I did.
What was that like for you?
Scary. You know, I had several thoughts that I shouldn't have been thinking, but I brung the Lord with me and we sat there, we had a decent conversation. He apologized and know that he have to finish his time out. But, you know, he sincerely apologized.
You took it to heart. You really felt like this is a genuine apology.
I did.
Did that, it doesn't bring your son back to state the obvious, but right. did that mean something to you?
It did. In a way it did, and in a way it didn't. I mean, it 'cause I forgave him, you know, during sentencing. I forgave him then 'cause I had to for me. But the first conversation was a few months ago, and just sitting there and thinking that, you know, I'm sitting with the person that took my child's life, and for some reason I feel sorry for him.
Did it feel strange to feel that way?
It did. Not sorry enough that I want him to come out of jail, but I felt sorry because at a young age of 16, there's a lot of children out here at a young age that do not think about it. And that's why it's so much problems. It's so much, you know, violence and things. We go into the school, myself and Rise Up Rochester, going to the schools and talk to children, and just listening to them, they're so angry. And what we notice is we ask them to hold their hands up if they've been touched by violence. And we break it down from the parents to the siblings on down. And what you see is a lot of siblings and parents that have been either put in prison or dead from violence. So, which Rock the Peace just recently launched a program for children that have been touched by violence, either by have lost a sibling or parent to violence, either by death or prison. So,
Sabrina, you show so much grace. I really am so moved by your description of meeting with this man now. He's 26 years old, I guess.
Yeah, well, he just turned 27.
27 years old.
Yes.
And having the thoughts, I mean, did you start simply by asking him, why did you do it? I mean, I'm wondering what goes through a parent's head to ask.
Yes, I did. At first, for the past 10 years, he kept up this lie that he did not pull the trigger, but I saw him pull the trigger. So sitting there, the first thing he said was, I didn't pull the trigger. So I asked him, why am I here? Why did you ask me to come here if you're going to keep up a lie knowing that I was there? So a few minutes later, he just broke down. He cried. And he said, I sincerely apologize. I said, for what? He said, for pulling the trigger and killing Chris. And he cried. And a few minutes later, he was like, I felt so light. I feel like a burden was lifted. I said, well, you kept a lie up for 10 years. Of course, a burden was lifted. And it was a moment.
Did you want to find out from him what led to his feeling like he had to pick up the gun at that point? Did you ask him that?
He said it because he was drinking and doing drugs and things all day, and it started over a fight. A young girl that like my son Chris, she lied to him about her age, so he died not knowing her true age. And we found out during the trial that she got on the stand and said he didn't know how old I was. So her cousin, which is not the killer, but her cousin came to fight Chris, thinking Chris knew how old she was. She told Chris she was 16, but she was actually 12. But she didn't look 12. She actually looked at older than 16. And so they fought, and Chris got the best of them, the killer said. He blackened the boy's eyes, defending himself. And so the killer looked at his friend's eyes, saw they were black, got out, and shot Chris just like that. Mind you, this killer was at my house a week before.
And he told you when you met him, if he had thought about it, if he had stopped and really tried to think,
yes,
it would be different.
Yes.
Wow. And here I am wondering if a program like this can have an impact. I mean, now granted, the hardest part is to make someone in that moment stop and actually think. But who knows? What if this saves 1 out of 100 lives? It's better than 0. I mean, it's not going to stop.
If you could save one life.
Yeah, no, I hear that.
If you could save one person.
Oh, Serena, wow. That's really strong stuff. Willie, does that, I mean, I've known Serena. I didn't know she had a chance to meet this man. That's powerful stuff. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I heard her her testimony, her story at a church event when I was invited to read all of the names of the homicide victims. And when I was reading those names, I was just like blown away and seeing their pictures, because they show the names and they show the pictures on the screen. I didn't realize how many of those individuals I knew. Like, I knew a lot of them. I went to school with some of those individuals. And then to hear her story and to see her ability to have the forgiveness in her heart that she did towards this young man, and to be as strong as she was, those are the type of things that make you want to do this kind of stuff. And the reason why I think that, I know that why I got involved in politics is because I wanted to help people and I wanted to make a difference in our community. And when you see the impact of gun violence and what it does to people, and you hear these type of stories, it's heart-wrenching, man. And it makes you realize that this is an ongoing systemic problem. It's not going to go away overnight. We need all hands on deck. We need everyone to roll up their sleeves and take a long-term and commit to a long-term partnership of dealing with this situation. And I think over the years, we've seen people, they kind of, the one-hit wonders, they come in with a great idea and they start it and then all of a sudden it goes away. And then you don't really hear anything about it until violence picks up again, like we had in the month of June in our city. But, you know, I just want to let people know that I'm committed to this. Yeah, I'm committed to this. And there's not a day go by that I don't think about this. There's not a time when I go to sleep, I'm waking up looking at my phone to see if I'm getting one of those calls. And you know, this is the type of stuff that we have to deal with, and people don't want to seem to be accountable for, but I'm willing to be accountable for it and willing to think about stories of what we just heard, and that keeps me going and lets me know, again, if it's just one life that we can save, then it's not in vain.
Serena, by the way, when does he... He's not going to be in prison, likely, until, well, when would his sentence be done?
He got 25 years.
25 years. So, but so in your mind, I'm thinking about how sentencing work and guidelines and behavior.
The jury didn't convict him of second-degree murder.
Right.
Not sure why, but they convict him of first-degree manslaughter. Mm-hmm. So the... maximum is 25.
When do you think he could be out?
My hope is never, but...
Yeah, I understand that.
I can't even think of the year right now. Okay. I know it, but
it's a little bit down the ways, but I'll tell you what I mean. If he is out, you have taken the first step, I think, in at least building back something of a life that, you know, he took your son, but he really... ended his own productive life, potentially.
Right.
And you are one tremendous person for willing to at least listen.
Thank you.
That's amazing stuff. Let me grab a phone call from Kyle in Rochester. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, how you guys doing
good.
Today? I don't know if this is more of a comment, but just kind of like a point of view. I think a lot of gun violence in the city, I grew up on Otis and Murray through the 80s and 90s. And I think a lot of gun violence actually kind of comes from like a deep-seated fear that people have. They're afraid of, you know, whatever it is that's put into their mind as being young. You can't be afraid of anything. You can't look like a punk. You can't do this. And I think a lot of the people that are killers, they're kind of just afraid people, you know, and taking it to the fists and things like that. It always ends up, you know, now somebody looks stupid out of the two and then it escalates. And I really think that it's kind of a fear thing that has to be taken care of early on, that it's okay to be afraid and it's okay to look stupid or be embarrassed. And you know, a lot of people, personally, my life has been affected many times by gun violence, and maybe not directly as a direct family member, but I know a handful of people I went to school with are either dead or in prison forever. Kind people that I knew that were kind to me. And it's just, you know, it's a big thing. And I feel bad for everybody that has to deal with that. And, you know, everyone shouldn't be so afraid and just go out and do their own thing.
Kyle,
but
thank you.
No. Big deal.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Kyle. And I'm sorry for what you have dealt with in your own life. I want to hear from our panel on this. I think from Kyle's call, he's talking about the way fear can lead to violence. Also, the way I'm also thinking, I'm wondering, Sabrina, if there is a fear of having to respond to certain situations with violence. I mean, do we have to throw down over certain things? You know, this whole idea of over a girl and someone thinks, you know, well, we're going to have to fight about this. And, you know, can we create kind of a different mindset that doesn't lead to violence, whether it's fists or guns at all? I mean, what do you make of Kyle's call?
Well, absolutely. Willie and I had been talking, and Serena had been talking about letting, number one, starting to listen to our kids, having them tell us what conflict resolution looks like for them. I don't really think these kids have grown up in an era, the same era that we've grown up in, where it was okay to have a fist fight. Because you probably would be their friend at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what changed that mindset, what changed that concept. I'm sure it was a breakdown of the community. But we have to teach our children that it's okay to resolve their issues without murdering somebody. I'm not even sure if they know how final that is, how final death is. I don't think they know how sensational death is. I remember there was a program where they used to take children or students to the morgue just to see what type of impact something like that would have on them.
Kind of a scared straight.
Scared
kind of,
straight. That was it. Yeah. So they would take them to the jails and to the morgue to let them know two things: that it does not have to end this way, and if you decide to pick up a gun, this is where you will be. There's a video out that we've been watching and hoping to push out to some of the rec centers. It's called The Front Row and Beyond the Front Row. And I'm not sure if you've seen these videos done by some local people, but it talks about you have three choices. You have three choices where you can put your parents at. One of them is at the front row of your graduation. The other one is at the front row of your
court.
Or
funeral.
And the third one is in the front row at your funeral. So there are some tools out there and there are some resources out there. We just have to make sure that we're making the connections. And I also wanted to mention that we are, when it comes to things like gun violence and homicides, we are dealing with some very, very tough issues. We have students who have lost a parent, and then we have students whose parents committed the murders, and now they're attending the same schools. So we have some really, really intricate issues that we are, very unique issues that we are dealing with, and it's going to take this entire community to eradicate that, to get at that, to make that right again.
Taran, is fear part of this?
Oh, my goodness. One of the things I've learned from, I work with college students, and they've taught me that relationships are motivated by one of two things, either care or fear. And if a relationship is motivated by care, it can be healthy. You can even end the relationship in a way and go your separate ways. But a relationship that is motivated by fear often gets, there's control. It gets unhealthy very quickly. And we see that whether, in relationships with young people dating, we can see that in our communities. So fear is a big motivator. And one of the things that we talk a lot about, and this is when we talk about gun violence, when we talk about violence in our city, it's a complicated issue. But one of the big things that we need to try to help all of our communities with is time. We have some great resources, we have some great things in place. But if we don't have the time to get people in touch with those, you can't do much. Having easy access to a firearm can take a very temporary situation and make it permanent. And I think that, that's sort of a common theme. And I think in some of the experiences that we've talked even in this room about in our own personal experiences is, how do we, in the situation for my family, it was way too easy to get hold of a firearm. So how do we create, the organization I'm a part of, whether it's educating families about if you own a firearm, how do you keep that firearm secure and keep your kids and your community safe? Right now, every gun starts in the system in the hands of an adult. So how do adults responsibly attend to that and care for that and store that? I know a lot of the firearms that we're seeing in the you know, what's happening in our city are actually local. They start local. They get stolen or they're sold. So what are some better ways that we can manage that? And, you know, even responsible gun owners, you know, if our kids get their hands on that, that can result in a dispute or a suicide or, you know, something that we just really don't want to happen. So how do we educate and remind the community of ways that the little things that we can do every day to keep each other safe?
Yeah, as we get ready to go to break, just to follow up on the point there about securing guns and if kids get access. The data is really clear that having a gun at home makes your home less safe. It doesn't. It's much more likely to be used accidentally by children, in a suicide, or in a domestic dispute, most often against a woman, but not always. And some people get upset when we talk about just the facts of that because they think that is sort of an attack on quote-unquote responsible gun ownership. And it is not meant to be. It is not meant to malign anybody who legally owns a gun. But the fact is a fact. I mean, we still have to grapple with what it means to have a gun in the household. Fair?
And I think that's the work that we need to do on a national level, you know, and we talk about policy changing culture. You know, you talked earlier about smoking, but I would also challenge seatbelts. You know, there was a time when people were like, you can't tell me what I have to do in my car. We know relatives who said, I'm not putting on a seatbelt, but now our kids are yelling at them, put your seatbelt on. We feel naked without that seatbelt. So how do we change culture? How do we change that conversation? So again, how do we get people informed so that we can, you know, absolutely law needs to be a part of it, community needs to be a part of it, but it's, you know, there's also a big culture shift, and we've moved away from responsible firearm ownership. People, again, going back to that fear thing, I want to feel safe. I want to be able to protect myself. And they go out and, you know, you can purchase a firearm. You can, if you pass a background check, you can bring that into your home. But that's a responsibility. You know, are you willing to do the education on an ongoing basis to care for that firearm, to make sure that it's going to work when you need it, that you know how to use it appropriately? You know, and those things. I mean, it's not an easy fix. You know, bring something like that, something with, you know, with that degree of lethality, you want to make sure that you know what you're doing. And that's what we're trying to promote, is bringing back that respect for the Second Amendment and respect for responsible firearm ownership. So again, I think we actually have a lot of common ground in that. We want to respect people's rights to do that, but we want to make sure that they know what they're bringing into their homes when they do that and what it's going to take if they want to do that responsibly and more safely.
All right. We're late for our only break, so let's get that break, and we're going to come back with our panel. More to talk about here, this remarkable conversation about gun violence in our community and how to get folks to think about it before they pick up a gun. That's coming back next. Coming up in our second hour, we could be on the brink of seeing Roe v. Wade overturned, but that doesn't mean just one thing. It could mean a lot of different things for abortion and reproductive rights in this country, and we're going to talk to a panel who have been working to overturn Roe v. Wade, working toward a post-abortion world, and we're going to talk about what practically it means. What's the landscape they envision? We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Adam writes to the program and says, Evan, I think this program sounds very well intended, but how many people who pick up a gun during a dispute know that they have a job in their future, know that they have secure family connections, know that they have somewhere to go beyond this week or next month? How many are going to college? How many are going to trade school? That seems to be an even bigger problem here from Adam. Councilman Lightfoot, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Adam's onto something there. And I think that's why we have to take a comprehensive approach. This is to bring attention to this particular situation. However, the anti-poverty initiative, a lot of this ties right back into poverty. So, of course, we're doing some things in that area, too, as far as the city is concerned. As far as me as a city council member, I'm very adamant about trying to get people back to work, trying to get people in trade schools. I'm not the one that says college is for everybody. I think college is not for everybody. I'm one of those that didn't go directly to college. I went to the Air Force. I went to the military. Then I became on the fire department. I got a skilled trade as a barber. I'm constantly out here trying to offer that as alternatives to college. So I think that we have to take a comprehensive approach to this problem. And of course, attacking it through poverty or anti-poverty initiative is also very important that we help give people options and alternatives to the street, alternatives to gangs, alternatives to doing illegal activities by giving them, making them feel good about themselves and the better of their quality of life. So I agree that, that's something we have to look at as well.
All related, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So Serena, what do you make of Adam's email saying that, you know, how many people who pick up a gun to commit an act of violence like that can see hope in their own lives, a future in their own lives? He's suggesting that that's a lot of people who commit these kind of acts don't feel hope or don't feel like there's a future for them. Do you agree?
I agree to some extent.
Okay.
But each individual, to me, that I can't say that matters, because we all have choices. And we make choices as to how our future is going to be. And picking up a gun is a choice. Going to school or not going to school is a choice. Looking for a job, not looking for a job, that's a choice. So, like I say, I agree to disagree on that.
Okay, yeah. Sabrina?
I don't think that's a fair assessment. I think there are more people who are impoverished who don't pick up a gun. So I don't know if that's an accurate assessment. I think sometimes the media skews it like that to make it look like that. But there are a lot of people who are in poverty, who are in skilled trades, or who are in college, who are working, who are supporting their families, who are taking care of their community. So I don't know if that's really a fair assessment.
Okay, Jerron?
I think Sabrina said it best. You know, it's that there's so many choices that we can make in a community, and how do we help them get connected? How do we help them to find that hope and agency? And I think that's something that everyone deals with at some time. You know, we talked about fear, and that's, I think, something that we all experience, that we have fear that we don't make a difference, that we can't change things. And I think that's a lot of the work that we're trying to do. You know, dealing with institutionalized racism, the issues that we have in society, absolutely, those are huge problems. We've said over and over again, this is a big issue, and this is part of it. But we also recognize that gun violence disproportionately impacts, communities of color, communities in poverty, women, marginalized communities. So everything's connected. But again, instead of looking at what are some of the places of agency and influence that we can make a difference.
It's interesting. Willie Lightfoot, the councilman's comments this hour, earlier this hour, you said that you have some frustration that within communities of color, as in your words, black on black or black on brown or brown on brown crime seems to get less urgency than when it's a different kind of crime, if I'm summing up your comments earlier this hour. And I hear Adam's email, and I don't think anybody denies that poverty is a problem, that there has to be a job opportunity, there has to be a future opportunity for young people, understandably so. You also seem to be, though, wanting to grab this idea of personal agency right now and giving it to everybody no matter the circumstances, which for someone like me who's just drowned in privilege my whole life, It's harder to imagine having to lift myself up and find hope where there may feel like there's less, but you seem to be determined to say, look, I don't care what life is like right now. You can't pick up a gun. You can't end someone else's life. You can't resolve a dispute this way. You can find a path for yourself as hard as it seems.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify my comment.
Sure, sure.
I didn't take Adam's comment as he was looking at the whole picture as the whole community. I understood it is very specific to, okay, the people that are committing these crimes, what is their background? What is their situation? And I think that there's a case that you could present that a lot of the situations where these people that are doing these type of crimes do have some of what he's saying is a part of the situation, and I'm being very realistic about it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not hiding from that reality. You know, if somebody knows, somebody's going to think twice about a situation if they have a $25 an hour job. they may think twice about pulling a trigger on somebody if they're making $50,000 a year, if they're a fireman, if they're a police officer, if they're, you know, if they work for Kodak or you know what I mean, have a good paying job and taking care of their family. They may think twice about making a 10-second decision than someone who's standing on the corner, per se, or who may feel like they have no hope. And so that's not a color thing. That's not an age thing. That's a poverty thing. And I'm not afraid to have that conversation and say, and to me, that should compel the community to want to help eradicate even that in our community of having poverty so people don't feel like they have hope. So that's what I'm saying is I'm not afraid to have that conversation. I'm not afraid to say that that's a part of the conversation, too. And I think that, but as the ladies have said here, it's individual choices. However, if I'm seeing this every day, my father did it, my uncle's doing it, my friends are doing it, everybody's around me, my choices seem very different than maybe someone, as you said, your privileged life where you've never seen that it growing up in your life. That's not a choice for you. It's not even an option. You're looking at it like, I wouldn't even think about doing that because it's not a part of your culture. This is about changing a culture and a mindset of people who potentially may have been growing up in a culture where this is okay. And I say that because our community, oftentimes I feel like we don't stand up enough to say, this is not okay, no matter what your economical situation is, no matter where you live, no matter what you have going on in your own personal home. Taking a gun and taking someone's life is not cool. It's not something that can't be undone. And we need to understand the impact of that, regardless of your economical situation or where you live.
Sabrina, Serena, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
I do. I just want caution people, or to be just be very careful about thinking that you live in these little houses and or in these little silos, and it could never happen to you because of your economic status. Because one day somebody might show up at your kid's school, mm-hmm. in nice suburbia. Mm-hmm. And wipe out everybody. So you have to be very careful on claiming claiming exempt from this situation.
This
can definitely affect every community.
And does.
Absolutely.
And it does. No question about that. I think that I appreciate the discussion. I wouldn't even call it a debate. I hear just a productive discussion among our panelists about the reality here. So as we get ready to wrap the conversation, let's hear from all of our guests, just maybe 30 seconds apiece, on what you want the community to do now. I'll start with you, Sabrina. Now that we've got this campaign and hashtag think about it, what do you want the community to do?
Get involved. Don't wait until your family is affected by violence.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
Okay. Charon.
What we know just from the statistics is that at some point, all of us will know someone who's been impacted by gun violence. So this really is everyone's issue. There's a lot of great organizations. Find where you have agency in your community. We all have those opportunities. So again, there's many great communities here in the Monroe County area to get involved with. But education is a great first step. And then from there, find ways to engage.
I'm looking at something Serena just handed me. You're going to tell me about this? When what you want people to do, you got the 9th annual Rock the Peace Fest coming up.
Right. That's this coming Saturday, noon to 7 at
Jones Square Park. It's
Jones Square Park. It's the 9th annual, but the 10-year anniversary. So Rock the Peace and Rise Up Rochester put this together. And it's for victims of violence. It's, you know, you go through so much each day. So one day we take that and bring joy and fun to folks that are going through something.
You're going to have music. You're going to have bounce house for kids.
Horses. Rise Up Rochester got Jumping for Justice. They're going to be there. We have so many activities, so many acts, talent from Rochester, lots of vendors, and we got a lot. Oh, free food! It's a free event, free community event, and it's free food and free live entertainment.
Noon to 7, Saturday, Jones Square Saturday. Park. It's the 9th annual Rock the Peace Fest. And Councilman Lightfoot, what do you want people to do?
I want people to think about it, you know, literally, and think about the opportunity that we have. Instead of looking at it as something negative, think about it as something positive. How can you, again, as some of the people have said, Sabrina said in her statement, get involved. And I think everyone is saying the same thing. Get involved. Contact my office if you want to be involved with this particular campaign and this particular gun coalition against gun violence coalition. 428-6554. And we look forward to hearing the community's input and getting the help. And we want to educate, advocate, and eradicate gun violence in the city of Rochester.
I'm checking it out online, cityofrochester.gov/thinkaboutit. That's Councilman Lightfoot. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Always good
Thank
to see you. Serena Cotton, founder of Rock the Peace. Always nice to see you. And
you too.
And I hope you have a wonderful weekend with this. I know it's tough, but it's important. Thanks for the work that you're doing. Our thanks to Sabrina Lamar, Assistant Director for Rise Up Rochester, also doing such important work in this community.
Thank you.
You, Sabrina. And Sharon Sattler LeBlanc, Moms Demand Action, doing great work as well. Very important work. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for keeping the conversation going.
You got it. More connections coming up.